Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Not too hot, not too cold, but just right. The Goldilocks Jobs Report on the broadcast today. Also, if consumers don't like the government spying on them, what can they do about it? And, I kid you not, Grumpy Cat has an agent. We're going to talk to him. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
This podcast is supported by Netflix Instant Streaming. Thousands of TV episodes and movies on your computer or mobile device instantly streamed by Netflix to save you time, money, and hassle. Free 30-day trial now at netflix.com/APM.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace Podcast for Friday, the 7th of June. And you remember the other day I called the IRS the government agency for which things keep going from bad to worse? Today's lucky winner is the National Security Agency. We're in day two of the surveillance scandal. Leaked court orders and NSA documents showing a far larger sweep of government monitoring than the public had known about. President Obama had this to say today.
I welcome this debate. And I think it's healthy for our democracy. I think it's a sign of maturity.
More from the president in just a bit, but there is going to be a debate about this. So we went around the country this morning to get an early start on that debate.
Do I think people are going to act differently online?
I don't think it'll change any sites I will go to. It certainly will change who I will vote for.
No, a big part of my job is online, social media, and emails.
I have a Facebook account, I have a Twitter account, I have Path, I have Keek. I'm going to keep it because all I'm doing is networking. I mean, if there's any harm in networking, then I guess the whole world has stopped then.
It bothers me, but I feel like there's not a whole lot I can do about it.
You know, maybe getting a non-Google email account.
Yeah, I guess you just feel violated, basically.
If you're not doing anything wrong, it shouldn't be an issue.
I watch what I say. I'll say that. I watch what I say, so.
And I know that the government's probably listening to this, too, so you've been found out.
That was Mark Maz, Nicole Nassif, and John T. in New York, Cappy Kincannon from Columbia, Missouri, Kimberly Mahon DiGennaro from Queens, Stan Castaneda from Kansas City, Kansas, Pat Ryan from Gladstone, Missouri, and Shariah Edwards from Kansas City, Mo. This whole thing, this whole story, is obviously bigger than any one company. Microsoft, Yahoo, Google, Facebook, Skype, Apple are all allegedly involved, although they deny participating with the government. But to pick up on what we heard from around the country, if consumers really got annoyed about this, what would that look like? Marketplace's Sabri Benishour has that story.
This morning, President Obama tried to calm the national freakout over the wide-ranging government surveillance programs.
I want to be very clear. Some of the hype that we've been hearing over the last day or so, nobody's listening to the content of people's phone calls.
He said the surveillance targeted so-called metadata, call numbers and call durations. Surveillance of internet communications like email, the president said, don't apply to American citizens and people living in the U.S. But he added,
you can't have 100% security and also then have 100% privacy and zero inconvenience.
That said, obviously, not everybody agrees on where the balance between security and privacy should be struck. And for consumers, options are limited.
There are technologies that can allow consumers to evade surveillance.
Amy Stepanovich is with the Electronic Privacy Information Center. She says encrypted phone services like Silent Circle or chat applications like Off the Record allow a consumer to go undetected. But in some cases, they cost hundreds of dollars a year, and you could only communicate with other people who have these apps.
There is no convenience factor here. It really is difficult.
Switching telephone companies is costly if you're locked into a contract. And avoiding Google and Facebook and Yahoo, well, maybe if you want to live the rest of your life in a cave. Pressuring companies to resist government surveillance is an option, says Mark Rumalt with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, but
when you receive a valid court order and there are federal laws obligating you to comply, you're kind of stuck.
This, says Rumalt, is a job for politics. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
Speaking of politics, the president and his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping are out here in Southern California this afternoon, Rancho Mirage to be specific, for their laid-back yet still high-stakes summit meeting in the desert. The two leaders, of course, get all the headlines. That makes sense. But for residents out there, the important part is the hundreds of people those two men are bringing with them. Staffers, security, advisors, media, all of whom will mean big business for local businesses. Marketplace's Noelle King went out to take a look around, and she started at Sunnylands, the exclusive compound where the meetings are going to be held.
there's a guard posted out front. He's got a walkie-talkie and a gold golf cart, and I can't see inside because the entire place is sort of blocked off by these, maybe they're iron bars.
I asked the guard, could I take a look inside? He asked me to leave. So I went to the Palm Springs Hilton.
Hi, can I help you?
Where the Chinese delegates were supposed to stay. General Manager Aftab Dada wants this event to expose Palm Springs to Chinese tourists.
Our Convention and Visitors Bureau is definitely going to do some target marketing. We're going to do anything and everything possible to showcase our destination to the international world, especially China.
But the Chinese delegation canceled because the hotel couldn't fit them all. Still, Dada has a full house.
The Air Force One crew. We also have the Marine helicopter crew that are also staying with us.
Across the street from the Hilton, Sam Harris is hoping those crew members will head over to his place, Sherman's Deli and Bakery. Here's his pitch.
We're famous for our large portions, corned beef, pastrami, Reubens, corned beef hash and eggs.
And in case President Obama ventures out for dinner, Casey Hedger, the general manager of Shame on the Moon, has a four-course prefix for $38.
We have a wonderful pasta dish with slippertail lobster and rocktail shrimp.
But if Obama does show...
Then, of course, customers never want to leave. It becomes a people-watching event, and obviously we want to make money, no offense.
So how much does our government spend on these summits? Exact numbers are hard to find. Steve Ellis is with the budget watchdog Taxpayers for Common Sense. He says it's probably in the millions of dollars, but it's staged to look like anything but.
They're not going to be wearing any ties. It's going to be short-sleeved shirts and all casual. That's what they want to get across as the message, rather than here we're spending millions of dollars when we've got a $16.5 trillion debt.
May seem a little wasteful to some, but in the Coachella Valley, they're just happy for the mini economic boom. I'm Noel King for Marketplace.
Wall Street loved today's jobs report right from the opening bell. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. There was more there in business in the economy than just the NSA story this week. Jobs as a good start. Cardiff Garcia from the blog FT Alphaville is in New York to help wrap things up for us. And Neela Richardson from Bloomberg Government is down in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. Hey, guys.
Hi, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
All right, so Neela, let's go jobs report first. Two-word answer, please. Is this jobs report good news or bad news?
It's mediocre.
No. That was, first of all, that was three words, and that was not one of the choices.
It's good news for the markets. It's bad news for the long-time trends, and particularly the middle class. What we saw was an uptick and a trend holding with the number of part-time jobs created. So the headline should be, markets are happy, economy creates a lot of crummy jobs.
Ooh, all right, interesting. Cardiff, good news or bad news?
Good news-ish, if news-ish is a word. You know, I found the report comforting, I think, is the right word, because it shows that, once again, it's a second straight report that shows that we are not going into a kind of mid-year swoon, and it's happening despite the fact that earlier this year taxes went up a little bit, despite the fact that the government's spending less money right now because of the sequester, and despite the fact that there's some uncertainty about what the Federal Reserve is going to do later in the year. So it's no reason to get complacent, but I'd say good news-ish.
I would just have to disagree with esteemed colleague here. I think that if you look behind the headline numbers, the actual 175,000 jobs, you'll see that a lot of those jobs created were in low-wage sectors. You'll also see that wage growth hasn't really changed year-over-year. In fact, average wage growth is not keeping up with inflation. And finally, what you'll see is that the economy for three straight months in the row hasn't added manufacturing. I think all of these point to a trend that shows a really slow growth environment for the American worker.
All right, hang on a second. There's two things I want to pick up on that, Neela. The first isn't any job better than no job?
Absolutely. Any job is better than no job.
All right.
But
I mean, I get your point about poor quality jobs, however, comma.
Right, right. But the thing is, can any job sustain a robust economy?
Right.
And that's what the Federal Reserve is going to be looking at. Beyond the headline numbers of 175,000 jobs created, are these jobs robust enough? Do they have the benefits and the wages that will ensure that the American consumer stays in the game? Remember, 70% of economic growth is based on the American consumer having a good job.
So let's talk about the Fed for a second, and then I'm going to get Cardiff in on this. But what do you think the Federal Reserve is going to do now? Status quo, stay the course, or are they going to start messing around and doing this taper thing that everybody's talking about? Neela, go ahead.
Oh, I think that the Fed is looking for sustained improvement beyond the headline numbers. Now, you'll see that economists are saying that about 200,000 jobs over a four-month period would do the trick and force the Fed to start tapering. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that they're going to look beyond that headline number. They're going to look at wage growth. They're going to look at hourly wages. They're going to look at the American consumer and to see if they're in a position, not just the markets, but the consumers in a position to start easing off on that gas pedal in terms of asset prices.
Cardiff, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the Fed might surprise everybody and wait a little longer than they think before stepping on the brakes. And in part because of a lot of what Neela just said. I mean, I think she and I actually agree on more than she thinks. I was emphasizing the ish earlier. You know, you got to finesse this a little bit. It's a matter of perspective. But she's right. It's no reason to get complacent.
All right, let's dip quickly into this whole NSA story thing. And Cardiff, let me ask you whether you think any of these companies that have been named, and let's say it again, they deny participating. Is there peril for them commercially in any of this?
You know, I think they're in pretty safe places in the American market, in part because of the network effects that you just talked about. A lot of people use these companies, use these online products because everybody else does, and it's very hard to overturn that. But you can definitely see a situation where the reputational damage that's inflicted on them could have an impact in foreign markets where they have some competition, and those other companies can then say, well, hey, listen, we might not be as big as these American companies, but at least with us, you know that we're not going to be giving away your information to the government. So that's where I think it might be a problem.
Neela, quickly, what do you think? Peril or no peril?
I think there is peril overseas, as Cardiff just stated. I think the EU, they may have already violated some EU privacy laws, and so that story will unfold in the coming days. And if there is an option overseas that means that Uncle Sam won't look at your pictures over the weekend, maybe that would be a good option to take if you're a foreigner.
All right. Neela Richardson from Bloomberg Government down in Washington. Cardiff Garcia from the blog FT Alphaville in New York. Have a good weekend, you guys. We'll see you.
Thanks, Kai.
Thanks, Kai. You too.
Bye-bye. It's been 2 years now since the Egyptian revolution, and the economy there still hasn't recovered. The hardest hit, as usually happens, have been the poor, millions of whom live in slums and shanty towns. Kimberly Adams reports now. They say they're in worse shape than they were before.
A few minutes' walk from a busy highway along the Nile River is the shanty town where Naima Mohammed says she's lived for 45 years. Piles of garbage fill crooked alleyways, and corrugated metal roofs balance on haphazard dwellings made of leftover building materials. Mohammed bursts into tears when asked how her neighborhood has fared since the revolution. Egyptian police largely withdrew after the uprising, and Mohammed says local toughs took over the small slum.
I'm fed up. The thugs want us out, and they fight with us.
As she comforts her mother, Nadia Mohammed says, in one of those fights, they attacked them with knives and acid.
Where's the government? It's been 2 years since the revolution. No security, no safety, nothing.
The government says at least 420 of the officially acknowledged slums are unsafe. Mohammed is lucky she has a bathroom, which some of her neighbors clearly do not.
Look at it, Egypt doesn't necessarily have a homeless problem, but at the other end, the people that do live in structures, the structures themselves, are not very good to live in.
That's Yahya Shawkat of the Egyptian Initiative for Personal Rights. He points out that high unemployment and a bad investment climate since the revolution mean people who have extra cash can stash it in real estate, but prices are still too high for most Egyptians. A recent report from a local NGO said there are more than 6 million empty housing units, real ones, not shacks, in Cairo alone. Food prices are up as well. At a government-run bakery near Naima Mohammed's home, people press against each other to buy the fresh baked and heavily subsidized loaves. Egypt's plummeting currency reserves and rising deficits tax the new government's ability to maintain its generous subsidy program. Wheat supplies seem safe for now, but fuel to keep power plants running, not so much. Bakery supervisor Amr Thabit.
The electricity cuts off for an hour, 2 hours. Sometimes the dough gets spoiled. Before the revolution, there was no problem with electricity.
Naima Mohammed fell into another fit of sobs, explaining the electricity bill for her cramped but clean two-room home had skyrocketed to 35 Egyptian pounds a month. That's about $5.
We said after the revolution, everything will improve. But it turns to be worse. Nothing changes.
The rich are still rich, and the poor can't speak. We can't.
The government says it's going to implement a new property tax on the wealthy and that some of that money will go towards revitalizing slums. But no one expects that anytime soon. In Cairo, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Coming up...
How do you not make money off cats on the internet? Come on.
The guy's got a point, people. But first... Let's do the numbers. Ooh, look at that. The happy, happy, happy music. Wall Street rallied on today's jobs report. The Dow Industrials up 207 points, 1.4%, closed at 15,248. The NASDAQ added 45 points, 1.3%, 3469 at the bell. The S&P 500 restored itself 20 points higher, 1.25%, 1643. For the week on by, the Dow picked up 0.9%. The S&P 500 added 0.8%. The NASDAQ put on 0.4%. Boeing climbed 2.75%. Today, Walmart advanced nearly 1% on its plan to buy back $15 billion in shares. Did you see, by the way, that Tom Cruise and Kelly Clarkson and Hugh Jackman were at their annual meeting today? I can't quite figure that one out. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.18%. You're listening to Marketplace.
This podcast is supported by Netflix Instant Streaming. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your computer, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. Streamed now by Netflix, a great value. Netflix Streaming has lots of movie and television options, including past seasons of House of Cards, Breaking Bad, and Arrested Development. Watch them using Netflix Instant Streaming and find thousands of other TV series and movies during your free 30-day trial at netflix.com/APM.
From the Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at what's coming up Monday. Two pretty big events get underway, attracting the brainy. Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference in San Francisco and the TED Global Conference in Edinburgh, Scotland. Diamond Foods hopes you've gone nuts for its snacks. It announces quarterly financial results. And it's the 78th anniversary of Dr. Bob and Bill W. founding Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. The jobs numbers that we covered earlier with Cardiff and Neela are murky, you could say. Good, but not good enough, especially for those who are new to the workforce. So we're going to start a series today about the trouble that young people can have trying to find a job. Our partners in this series at Youth Radio are calling it Jobsticles. So as teenagers head out in search of summer jobs in a tough market, Ashley Williams explores whether any job is, in fact, a good job.
All right.
$8 an hour plus tips. Drake Elliott says it's not so bad to be a pizza delivery driver, especially since the job comes with perks.
You're above a civilian slightly. Like, I can double park in the middle of the street, hold up my pizza bag, be like, it's okay, ma'am, I'm a pizza delivery driver. I'm just doing my job.
And at 20 years old, the Santa Barbara, California community college student has already had a lot of jobs.
Well, I've been an administrative assistant. I've worked as an intern at a graphic design company. I've been a janitor. I've been a counselor at a skateboard camp. I've worked.
That's not even counting the jobs that Elliot doesn't put on his resume, like when he tried laying tiles for a home remodel.
I had absolutely no idea what I was doing.
He broke half the tiles and was fired the same day. Elliot says with so few jobs available to people his age, he'll try anything. Ultimately, he wants to be a therapist. But in the meantime, he's trying to build skills, figuring out what he's good at. Occasional failure is actually a part of his plan.
I think it could be a very good strategy for some people to just try a whole bunch of stuff and see what works.
Bonnie Bell is a career coach in Oakland, California. She says it's not necessarily a red flag to have lots of short-term jobs on your resume.
It could be a conglomerate of experience. Somebody could brag about in an interview eventually, I've had 12 jobs, and out of that, I've found this, colon.
Bell says it's all about what comes after the colon. meaning that young people have to turn their job history into a narrative that makes sense. So after 10 different jobs, what can you say you've learned?
Check. Chickity check. One, two. Ben. My name's Ben Knutson.
Knutson had the opposite problem last summer. He had just graduated high school and had zero job experience. Playing guitar wasn't paying the bills, so he applied to coffee shops, record stores, retail, basically anything. Knutson kept striking out until he saw a flyer.
It said, like, I need a job fast, love the environment, call this number.
So he called, and 2 days later, he got a job canvassing. You know, the people who approach you on the street and say,
hey, you, yeah, you, how's it going? Do you have a second to help save the environment?
Most people don't stop. Canvassers face constant rejection, trying to meet a daily quota to keep their jobs. Knutson lasted a month before quitting. According to one sociologist's study, most canvassers only survive 2 weeks. Is such a short-term job really worth it? I asked career coach Bonnie Bell.
2 weeks of that experience is much better than 2 weeks of doing nothing, because you have to learn to think on your feet. You have to engage people.
Skills that are essential to any job. Knutson says the canvassing job wasn't a total waste. He made a couple $100 and put it on his resume, emphasizing the customer service and people skills he acquired. A year later, Knutson has 3 jobs he likes better. One even lets him explore his passion for guitar rock, writing for a music magazine. In Oakland, I'm Ashley Williams for Marketplace.
Ashley's story came to us from Youth Radio's New Options desk. Here's a job that just 5 years ago couldn't really have even existed. Meme manager. I'm going to say that again just in case you missed it. Meme manager. People who capitalize on and help grow those viral trends the internet gives us. Ben Lashes is one, best known for a cat for whom he has just, and I can't actually believe I'm saying this, made a movie deal. Ben, thanks a lot for coming in.
Oh, man. Thank you so much. This is a thrill.
Well, almost as much for me, because you have somehow found a way to make money off cats on the internet. explain that, will you?
How do you not make money off cats on the internet? Come on.
Well, clearly it takes a little creativity. So tell me about Grumpy Cat.
Sure. Grumpy Cat is one of my newer clients. Came out in September of this last year when Brian Bundeson took pictures of his sister's cat.
Yeah. Brian Bundeson, some guy out there in internet land.
Yeah, I mean, he's a cool guy who lives in Ohio. Okay. And he was visiting his sister in Arizona, and she had a pretty new kitten, and it looked crazy. And
it does, know. And we've got pictures on the website in case, you know, you've been living under a rock and you haven't seen this cat.
Definitely go Google it. And I didn't jump on it first day or anything ambulance chasery like that.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't want to do that.
But I was getting interest from people that I worked with, and I'd been watching it a lot, and I was like, I'm kind of falling in love with this cat.
This idea that there's a meme industry is kind of mind-boggling. Like, I mean, you guys created this out of whole cloth, kind of.
Kind of. I mean, I don't want to be the guy who's like, well, let me tell you,
I get that,
cloth.
But come on.
But come on, dude. I mean, totally, right? Yeah, so I started doing this about 3.5 years ago because Charlie Schmidt, who created Keyboard Cat, which is the orange cat in the blue shirt that plays the keyboard.
You say this like I should know what you're talking about, man.
Bum, 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 bum.
Okay,
bum,
Google
bum,
that one too.
Right.
But anyway.
Once you see it, you'll go, oh, that keyboard cat. You know, it's the Elvis of internet cats.
And somehow I feel lame. Do you know a meme when you see it?
Yeah, kind of. I mean,
you can look at something and say that's going to be huge.
I mean, you can never predict exactly how huge it's going to be, but I do like kind of watching this stuff like the stock market and going, that's a, you know, like when Bauer was going on, I was like, you know, buy early
Bauer
and sell.
With the, that
so
was,
quick, you know,
it was,
the Harlem Shake.
Reminder. Yeah, the Harlem Shake, which I steadfastly refused to have on this broadcast. And I think that actually might be the first time it was ever mentioned.
I'm sorry.
Maybe second
from the
time.
Record.
How much longer do you think it can keep going though?
I mean, to me, memes are the new pop culture characters that will live on. There's been an imaginary line between internet famous and regular famous that I don't think really exists, you know, or should exist. We're going to only be looking at more content on digital devices and more chances for the regular Joe, like you or me, because I consider you a pretty regular Joe.
I appreciate that.
You can just put something out there on the internet. If it's good enough, it will rise to the top. You know, it's content is really king, and that's like a total stereotypical cliche line that like
people
always say.
You sound establishment, dude. I got to tell you, that's way old establishment stuff.
All right. Well, I had to break through to some of the people listening to Marketplace here, but
Ben Lashes, Grumpy Cat, look it up. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
That music you're hearing, that's Keyboard Cat. He's the Elvis of the internet, you know.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today, just because we didn't get enough about cats with Ben Lashes, as seems appropriate. After an interview like that, we're going to quote BuzzFeed. They crunched some data from the American Veterinary Medical Association and came up with a list of the most cat-friendly and dog-friendly states out there. Louisiana and Alabama are the top two dog-loving, cat-hating states. Maine and Vermont go for cats over dogs by the biggest margin. Check it out for yourself at marketplace.org. That's our website. The Marketplace angle, by the way. None at all. Just a late on a Friday angle. That's it. All right, we're done. That's Marketplace from APM. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Sitar Nieves. The executive producer of the broadcast is Deborah Clark. JJ Yore is the vice president and general manager. Coming up all next week on the program, a new series called Consumed, Why We Consume the Way We Do and Where Exactly That Gets Us. For one family in Maryland that we're going to meet on Monday, it means buying everything they can to give their kids an edge, including a very pricey baseball bat.
It's a big difference from a $40, $50 bat. It's a big difference, man. And that's where you say you got to pay to play.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you Monday. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.